chickens in the houses, they got chickens in the trees, chicken in the pots, the Mardawog, the Petaloomies, out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay? Now Marvin got me started, sold me my first hen. Now I got 4 and 20, and 24 more again. I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay? Chicken in the morning, it's chicken in the night. Weren't for chicken, Petaluma never would have reached its height. I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay?
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful Smart Talk about food, wine, and farming here on KRCB. It's Michelle Anna Jordan. How you doing on this wonderful gray evening? I loved the drop in temperature midweek. From what, 91 down to, you know, 50 in a few hours? Yes. And my garden is very happy. And as I drove here tonight, and actually did quite a bit of driving today, the calla lilies this year just are loving the rain. I seem to be seeing more calla lilies than I have in a few years. Before I introduce our guests, a couple of things I wanted to tell you about. If you love artichokes like I do, I really love them. You will be pleased to know that Green Globe artichokes, the ones with the thorns in the tips, are abundant this year. For a time, it seemed like they were being replaced by thornless artichokes, and they're a different variety, and that's sort of like seedless watermelon. They're growing them not for taste, but for the lack of seeds. And those thornless, whatever variety, and there's actually a couple different varieties of artichoke that don't produce the same thorns, and they're deeper green. They sometimes have a bit of a purple cast. They're not as meaty, and they're not as delicious, but I know that, I think it was yesterday, so for the last several days, Andy's in Sebastopol has had really nice Green Globe artichokes for 99 cents. They had them at Furcrest for 79 cents. So this is the season to eat your fill of artichokes. I cooked 15 last night, and I was at the West End Farmers Market, which if you haven't noticed, now it's in its either third year or fourth year, and it's moved. It's in the parking lot of the Visitor Center in Railroad Square rather than on Donahue Street at the Duturk Round Barn. So it's a lot easier to get to, and there's a lot of foot traffic because that's a tourist area. So it was really nice farmer's market today, and I made artichoke, green, olive, and walnut tapenade. And I made a lot of it. The regular recipe calls for 3 artichoke hearts, so I had 15. Really yummy, and I have leftovers. Yay! Want to tell you something, 2 things about next weekend. If you're going to go see Amy Goodman, it starts at 10 o'clock. You need to know that traffic will not be normal because that day is also the day of the Apple Blossom Parade, which starts at 10 o'clock. The streets are a lot of the streets are closed off as of 9 o'clock. So you need to get that information, plan your route so that you don't get stuck. Traffic can be really bad. If you're not going to go see Amy Amy Goodman, you might consider just stopping off for the parade. For the 23rd year, I think, in a row, Dachshunds on Parade will be part of it. And yes, Joey and Lark, and we hope Lark will be in a poodle skirt, or I should say dachshund skirt. So we will be there right near the front because Joey is a senior dachshund, perhaps the most senior dachshund. So that is on Saturday as well. So there you go. And my guest is somebody I actually had on, someone from Laguna Farm, very early in Mouthful's history, probably within the first 7 or 8 weeks, back when Scott Matheson was operating the farm, started on his grandfather's land. And now we have Jennifer Branham Burns. Welcome. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
And you're a co-owner now of the farm.
Yes.
And the farm just seems to be doing gangbusters. I see you at lots of farmers markets. So when did you step in and get involved?
It was 6 years ago in January, mm-hmm. was when my business partner, Ignacio, purchased a farm, mm-hmm. with Scotty's help and support. Ignacio had at that time been working on the land for 18 years, and I had been working for 5 years, and the two of us were colleagues and co-workers, mm-hmm. and we knew Scotty was getting ready to make a transition, and some people were interested in partnering or taking on the farm, until one day he came to the two of us and said, I can't imagine anyone else doing this but the two of you, and gave us the opportunity by financing a loan for us to purchase the farm and lease the land.
Gosh, that's great. And so it's really continued seamlessly without a break.
Yeah,
it seems, from the customer's point of view.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Ignacio and I had already worked together, right. So we just kind of carried on, uh-huh. doing our roles, and we liked what Scotty was doing. Mm-hmm. We made a few minor changes. It's almost like when you're renting a house and then all of a sudden you own it, you get to, sure. paint it a different color.
Uh-huh.
Just a few minor changes, mm-hmm. but we didn't want to change too much, mm-hmm. because we felt like his model was proven and our members were happy, and we certainly were. So we kept on with doing what he had been doing for many years, mm-hmm. before.
And we should say, sort of on the south-ish west side of the Laguna de Santa Rosa.
Yes.
I know it gets in busy, or in wet years, the fields can get really wet.
Underwater, we, yeah. can kayak through them.
Oh, yeah? Okay, and so, I get it's like that this year?
Yes, absolutely. Uh-huh. We definitely went underwater this year, and we appreciate that because we have the fewest number of gophers in all of West County.
Lucky you. That's right.
Gophers cannot swim.
There you go. How many acres are you farming?
25,
that's a lot. And you are operating the CSA.
Yes.
I think you had the first CSA program in Sonoma County, and I think yours is still the largest.
Yeah, Tierra Vegetables started right around the same time, mm-hmm. as Laguna Farm. And yeah, so we started around the same time, mm-hmm. but it's one of the oldest CSAs. This, mm-hmm. is our 31st year.
Wow. And how many members do you have at this point?
We have around 400 members.
That's huge.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we make, you know, it's actually a little bit more than that because we make around 400 boxes a week, but some of our members are every other week.
Mm-hmm.
So I sometimes think about how many bellies we feed in terms of, you know, a CSA member could be a family of four.
Mm-hmm.
And so we feed well over 1,000 bellies every week, and that makes me feel happy.
Yeah, that's great. And then how many farmers markets are you attending at this point?
Right now we're at two farmers markets. Mm-hmm. We're at the Sebastopol Farmers Markets on Sunday in the, mm-hmm. square, and then we are at the Santa Rosa Market at the Wells Fargo LBC. Mm-hmm. I hear it's going back to Luther Burbank Center. It's going back to its original,
yes,
name.
Yes, and we are so glad. So, LBC. We all still called it LBC anyway. Now, are you there on both Wednesdays and Saturdays,
we're
or just
not
Saturdays?
There on Wednesdays.
Okay, just, yeah. Saturdays. And you have brought some beautiful things. So I want you to talk about the season and walk me through what you brought.
Yeah, well, it's so wonderful you know, celebrating agriculture in Sonoma County, because we really do live in a year-round growing climate, mm-hmm. and it's nice to eat in season, and it's nice to celebrate the things that are coming on. I noticed that Lau on Farmers Farm on Highway 12 has strawberries now.
Three strawberry farms that I know of so far. The two that Lau has,
okay,
and then the one in Sonoma on Watma Road.
They all just
that one's
up.
Open too. Yes, this last week.
So we're all celebrating strawberries, and those of us that like to eat in season, it's a fun time of year because new things are coming on, such as strawberries. And what I am enjoying right now is our green garlic. Mm,
yes. And in fact, my column that will come out on Wednesday is about green garlic and garlic scapes.
Okay.
So it's the perfect time of year for it.
So tender, and we put green garlic in the CSA, and we put it on a list of what's in your box and in our newsletter. And often people are looking through their box looking for the green garlic because they think it's a cured head of garlic that should be green. They don't realize it's a tender leek-like looking bunch. And so this is our green garlic right here. I'll hand it over to you. And you can smell
so
a nice,
good. Yes.
Mellow garlic flavor, and it's easy to work with. You don't have to smash it with a knife and peel it. You just chop it up the stem, and then the tops are wonderful for a soup stock.
Absolutely, and I like making soup with the whole thing.
Yes.
I just love it. Oh, it smells so good.
And then not to be confused. So green garlic is something that you can really only find this time of year because soon enough it's going to create a bulb and the tops will die back. And it's the wonderful cured pungent garlic that we enjoy year round. But if you go to the farmer's market right now, chances are many of the farms will have green garlic on display.
Yeah, I saw it for the first time a week ago.
Okay.
And it was much smaller than yours. It looked like scallions, except if you looked close, you could tell, and then you could smell it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's just starting to come out.
And then I have, you know, very similar to the green garlic, I have some nice tender leeks.
Beautiful looking leeks. Really beautiful.
And this is something that we have, you know, in the wintertime, but mostly in the spring and into the summer. So leeks and green garlic look a lot alike. In fact, sometimes I have to sniff them a little bit and figure out which is which.
And they also go together really well.
I think so.
You can make a great soup. You can also, by taking the white parts of both and chopping them up small, make a wonderful risotto at this time, a wonderful spring risotto. Then add some chives on top, and you've got all of those different garlicky flavors going on.
It's fun to see how eating in season, how the food that's coming out of the ground this time of year kind of does all go good together.
Yeah.
And it's often the things, you know, in the winter there's a lot of citrus, and that's what we like to eat, or the winter squash that you bake in your oven. Mm-hmm. I think it's nice that we don't have winter squash in July when
it's
really
hot. You don't want it in your oven. Yeah, exactly. The seasons are wise. I eat almost exclusively. I do a couple of things out of season. I can't live without lemons, you know, and there's two or three months when maybe they're not in season here, but I have them in my freezer, or I freeze lemon juice. But otherwise, I pretty much follow the seasons because I do most of my shopping at the farmer's market.
I'm really enjoying the nice tender asparagus that's coming right now, and you can find asparagus local, and so it's really fresh. And
do you guys have it?
We do have it, very limited.
You don't? So. Do you ever get it to the market?
We do not.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Really, it just goes to your CSA customers.
It's even in the farm stand because. You know, that's kind of a benefit of our CSA members,
sure.
is they know that they can come and get asparagus the day that it's harvested. And you can eat asparagus raw if it's super fresh.
It's so good when it's – I have a little tiny pouch of escapees.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't popped up yet. But when they do, just go out, harvest it, slice it. That's lunch.
It's perfect.
Yeah, it's so good.
So, some other things that are in season that we've been enjoying coming up are basil. And
basil's coming up already?
In two weeks.
Okay.
I looked at it today.
Uh-huh.
And it's about, I don't know, about 6 inches tall. So we
could
harvest
seems almost
it right now.
Seems kind of early.
We like to do things early just because.
And I do remember, you guys always are the first with basil.
We seed it very early in the greenhouse, and then we also grow under plastic hoop houses mm-hmm. that just get a little bit warmer. Mm-hmm. And usually about every other year, we lose the entire crop to frost. So it's a big gamble. It's something that's worth the risk because moving into the spring, having basil is a nice mm-hmm. is a nice one to have. And by then, you know, maybe we're a little bit tired of all the roots and greens and ready
welcome
to
welcome the new things that are coming along.
Move on to things that are tender and fresh.
Now, do you guys do any nettles?
I do, personally. Uh-huh. They are growing on the
farm. Yeah, because I thought they were probably in that area.
Yeah, they are growing on the farm. And so I'll go out and mm-hmm. put my hands in bags and harvest some. And I dried some and mm-hmm. made a really neat sort of popcorn seasoning salt.
Oh, nice.
I took dried nettles and toasted pumpkin seeds and Himalayan salt and blended it up together and sprinkled mm-hmm. it over my popcorn.
Oh, that sounds good.
Made a little seasoning blend out.
I love nettles. I like nettle tea. I like nettle tea, nettle risotto, and if I'm feeling really ambitious, which only happens every few years as far as cooking goes, I make fresh nettle pasta.
Okay.
And it's just the most beautiful color of Kelly green. It just mm-hmm. turns out this vibrant green.
At Laguna Farm, we're neighbors with the Sonoma County Herb Exchange.
Oh, yes.
And they bring in a lot of nettles this time of year.
Absolutely. Yeah. I saw someone at the farmer's market. It was always Nancy Skull.
Yes.
That was first with nettles and first with, she had the best asparagus.
Oh, nice.
We miss Nancy.
I do.
We really miss Nancy. We're going to take a little musical break here, and we'll be right back on Mouthful. Music interrupt us. We will be right back. You got the number there, Mike?
I'm trying to.
Okay. You know, CD players sometimes have a mind of your own. You get it all queued up, and then you turn your head, and it changes on you. When I was doing my music show, my Friday night music show, that used to happen to me all the time. Here we go. It's Prince with Cream. Prince. I didn't go to that recent couple of shows. I've never seen him. Wish I had. But he sure sounds good. Okay. I want to talk about the CSA.
Okay.
Because, you know, I think everybody knows what it means, and everyone doesn't. So first of all, community-supported agriculture, community-subscription agriculture.
Community-shared agriculture.
And my understanding is it started in Japan.
Yes.
Spread to Germany. And then spread. So many trends happen in California and sort of spread to the East Coast. This went the opposite direction.
Mm-hmm.
So, there. Quick history of community shared agriculture. And there's the purest form. And I want you to talk about how you do it.
Well, it's so neat because there are many, many different adaptations. It's almost like every farm does their own way of CSA. And as you say, in the purest form is people will pay up front for the season, maybe 6 months.
Yeah, and the way that I heard it initially when I was first researching it, a farmer would figure out how much acreage, how many people his acreage would feed, mm-hmm. divide the cost that he would be putting into it plus his profit by those people, and that's what you would pay.
Right.
And then if there was a natural disaster, you shared in the farmer's losses.
Right.
If there was an abundance, you shared in that. And it was a way for small farms to stay afloat.
Yeah, so you'd own maybe 1/30th of the farm.
Oh, yeah, right.
And that that model I am not really seeing as much today.
No, you don't see. No, it seems really modified.
Right. And our adaptation at Laguna is because we are a year-round farm and we do grow year-round. The year never stops. It's not a beginning or an end, though in the spring there's a lot of expense on the farm. And I did put out in the newsletter that last week that even though people pay weekly for their CSA box at Laguna, we have the opportunity to auto debit their credit card once a week, and I find that that is much more affordable for people, even though at the end of the year they're paying the same amount of money.
Yeah.
Well, $20 a week or $20 every other week, you know, is more, people are more able to afford that.
Sure.
Or in budget for it. But some folks, you know, they work on a different budget, and so I put it out there that if they are able to prepay quarterly, in the spring is really the time to do it.
Yeah.
And several of our CSA members got back to me and said, well, you know, go ahead and charge me for 3 months worth of CSA boxes. And we'll put in a little bit more at this time, knowing that we'll get our weekly CSA. And
yeah, because you have what? You have seed expenses, particularly.
Yes.
Probably extra labor expenses, too, because you have to do all the starts.
Exactly. And we're not, we don't have the abundance this time of year, so we're not doing any wholesale right now, hardly any restaurants, and our farm stand is much smaller, and our farmer's market is much smaller. So we're not, we're putting out so much more money right now, but we're not bringing in as much. And So we kind of float through this time of year, and all farmers are very stressed out in the spring with the weather, and it's go time. We have to do as much as we can. At the same time, it's a little bit more challenging, and it's really expensive. So what our CSA is that people, they sign up, and they get their bank account debited either once weekly or once a week or every other week, depending on how often they want to get their produce box. And they have a few different options in terms of, we have a produce box and a juicing box. This is something that I added a couple years ago, noticing that a lot of people are really into juicing and smoothies and eating raw. And I thought, you know, I can do a separate box and give people more choice. And folks are really enjoying it.
So for, at this time of year, for a box designated for people who like to make a lot of juice, what's in it?
Mostly greens right now.
So people are juicing kale, chard.
Absolutely. Parsley, cilantro, beets, carrots.
You guys have great carrots.
We're getting a lot of local citrus right now. It's lemons are wonderful, and so with Laguna, we don't limit ourselves to what we grow.
Right, you trade with some other farmers.
Exactly. So Healdsburg and just north of Healdsburg had a bumper crop of citrus this year, and so we had, you know, Meyer lemons and navel oranges and beautiful ruby grapefruit and white grapefruit. So those items were going into the juice box as well.
I know that in some parts of some parts of Santa Rosa, but definitely in Healdsburg, you can walk through some of the neighborhoods just east of town and look up, and there's tons of unharvested citrus.
Yes.
So much of it. And I always want to knock on people's doors and harvest it or wait till the lights are out and steal it. But I've never done that, honest. So you're getting citrus from other farmers. And then do you trade with things you're growing, or how does that part work?
We buy it from them.
You buy? Okay.
Yeah, we buy it. Our trade is with cash if they want to buy our stuff, and
okay,
if we want to buy theirs.
Keep it easy.
Well, but where we do trade is a lot of our CSA members who have backyard lemon trees will come in with grocery bags of lemon trees, and then I give them farm credit, and they can shop in our farm stand with the money that they've traded for lemons.
Is the farm stand open to anyone or just to your CSA members?
You know, right now it's just for CSA members, and I think about that This time of year, mm-hmm. actually, I think, gosh, why would I ever want to turn people away from shopping in the farm store? And mm-hmm. I do welcome people to come in and try it out, mm-hmm. but it really is a benefit of membership. Mm-hmm. And as we were talking before about that asparagus that was just picked, you know, the day of, yeah. you know, the people that are our members, I think, should have the first right to that.
Yeah, and one of the things that you can trade, you have a trade table.
Yes.
Where if you don't like something, you put it on the table and you take something.
Exactly.
Yeah. What is it that people are not liking these days?
It's so fun because I like to have that conversation. People are ashamed of the vegetables that they don't like. And I say, you know, put it out there. Everybody
sure.
eats something.
And yeah,
it's
absolutely.
So interesting to see. You know, it's almost like, what's your sign? So I have to ask you, how do you feel about cilantro?
Me?
Yes.
Oh, I adore cilantro.
I
could
love
live
it.
On, but there are people who hate it.
Hate it.
I could live on cilantro.
I've had people visibly upset. It's contaminated their produce box. They've gotten it 3 weeks ago, and they absolutely hate it. Trade it out. You don't have to go home with something you don't like.
Yeah it's interesting that, and you know, some people are very snobbish about their hatred of cilantro. Some people say, well, Molly O'Neill, writing in the New York Times, she's not doing that anymore, but she wrote this column about, well, if you don't like cilantro, don't worry about it. It's just because you're a better taster.
Oh,
I was like, Molly,
okay.
That's actually not true.
Yeah, I heard that, you know, some people actually have, they really, it really does taste like soap.
Exactly.
Them. It tastes
yeah.
different
it
than
tastes like
what
soap.
You and I enjoy.
Yeah.
I find myself lucky that I love cilantro.
Oh, I'm so glad I love cilantro. It just brightens so many things.
In fact, cilantro is one of those things that I put on a hat and sunglasses, and when we don't have it at Laguna Farm, I'll go to Andy's Market
and buy
yes, cilantro.
Yes,
I can't do without it. And it bolts all the time. Yeah. Either have it or you don't.
I've tried to grow it and it bolts. And then this time, a friend who's living at my place is a gardener, and she planted it. We planted it in two or three places. It's like, oh, it sprouted in this one spot, and I put a screen over it. The birds got in and ate out all of it anyway. So no homegrown cilantro.
Another tricky one is a white doll turnips. I have them right here. They're tricky for people.
Yes. Now those, you know how I like those. These are the white turnips. I like them raw, in coleslaw.
Okay.
I love them in coleslaw.
Okay.
I think they get a little too pungent-y for me if they're steamed, but raw, they're fabulous.
I like them roasted with a yep. little bit of honey.
Yeah, roasted, they're really nice.
And my favorite part of the is the tops.
Yes.
Tops are wonderful.
Yep. Beet, turnip greens, beet greens, any really green tops.
So I think of this as one of my favorites because it's a two-for-one
yeah.
vegetable. You know,
absolutely.
You get the tops, the mm-hmm. turnip greens, and then you get the bottom part that you can either eat raw or roast, you know, or shave. There's so many different ways mm-hmm. to enjoy them. But this is a tricky one. So it's just a matter of putting out recipes for people
mm-hmm.
and giving folks ideas on how to enjoy them. And mm-hmm. then people will find their way. And like you said, if somebody absolutely doesn't like it and if it makes them visibly angry, then they can certainly trade it out for something they do like.
Right. So other than cilantro, are there, I know for a while ago, I don't think this is the case anymore, cauliflower was one of those things. But now cauliflower, everyone wants cauliflower now.
Cauliflower is in vogue.
Yes.
It's almost like the new kale because
exactly.
it goes for a lot of the gluten-free recipes.
Oh, yes.
One challenge
chop it
I
up
could
to make,
show you yeah. is our, we give people a bunch of parsley that is rather large. And it's tricky for people to figure out what to do with this much parsley.
Oh, send them to me. I can go through that much parsley in one meal.
Parsley pesto.
Yeah, and plus, if you're making soup with greens, I make a lot of sorrel soup because sorrel, for some reason, grows at my house really well. But really anything, beet greens, any of the greens, if you add or pesto, if you're making pesto, you add some Italian parsley, it keeps the vibrant green. It doesn't lose its color
mm.
when you cook it. So it keeps things from turning that sort of gray that you don't want them to turn.
I love parsley pesto. I love adding it to my basil.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a great one. I juice parsley quite a bit mm-hmm. as well. It's interesting. It kind of coagulates when you juice it. It gets almost like beets, if you will, you know.
Interesting.
Or blood. I hate to put it that way, but it gets very thick, so you shake it up a little bit.
I had no
and
idea.
Juicing parsley is wonderful. Adds a lot of depth to the juice. So if you have maybe a root like carrot or beet and add some apple to it, it gets really sweet. Mm-hmm. And if you juice parsley and add that to your juice, it gives it a little bit of depth that otherwise it could be pretty zingy, if you will.
Yeah, I'm waiting either to have the time or if someone wants to beat me to it, please do. Savory juices.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have much of a sweet tooth.
Okay.
And I would really like to experiment with some savory juices, which would require lemon, parsley, cilantro, and then some root
celery.
Vegetables. Celery, yes. I could live on celery.
Have you been to the Nectary at the Barlow?
Not yet.
Okay.
Not yet. They're on my list to check out. Something else. Oh, gosh, I wanted to ask you something else. It was right on the tip of my tongue. Well, let's just continue with the CSA for now. So is it $20 a week?
It's $20 a week for farm pickup.
And you also do some drop-off delivery?
Yeah, we have neighborhood drop sites. Uh-huh. So if folks want to go to downtown Santa Rosa or Occidental or Rohnert Park, then we will deliver there. And then we also have home delivery as well.
Uh-huh. And that there's an add-on price for those sorts of things.
Yes, so it's $24 for a neighborhood drop site and $26.50 for home delivery.
Okay, and then do you do other add-ons?
We do. So whether it's our own produce or things that we buy locally, like Village Bakery bread, people could get the base box, and that's all the CSA boxes are very similar, whether they're produce boxes or juicing boxes, and then. From there, they can add on a loaf of bread, a pound of onions. Right now, we have asparagus available, so people could have that in their box. And I'm finding that a lot of our members that get home delivery have a lot of add-ons, you know, because, hey, if we're going to have it brought to the house, we might as well get everything we need.
Exactly.
And then the folks that do farm pickup, they generally like to shop from the farm stand on their own and pick out their own things.
And what days of the week are the boxes available?
Tuesdays and Thursdays.
Okay, so that's what it's been for a really long time.
Yeah, it's flexible in the sense that we build your box on Tuesday, and it's available at 1 o'clock, and then you actually have until Saturday evening to pick it up. We put it in, I think you've seen our straw bale walk-in cooler.
Yes.
And we put it inside and keep it cold at the right temperature, and people can come when it's convenient for them. And then by Saturday night, if they haven't picked it up, then we donate it to charity.
Okay, that's a nice way to go. Remember what I was going to ask you. I think, if I have this right, in the summer maybe, you actually grow iceberg lettuce. Is that right?
Nope.
Or was it not you?
Nope, not me.
It wasn't you guys. I was thinking it was you.
Huh.
And I was just so excited that somebody was growing iceberg lettuce locally.
Okay.
Because you have to have iceberg lettuce. Well, there's two times I need iceberg lettuce. The first time is for the first BLT.
Okay.
And I make myself wait until local tomatoes are available, and then the first BLT has to be from the outer three layers of the iceberg lettuce. And then if there's a heat wave over 100, by the third day, the only thing I want is iceberg lettuce.
Yes.
It's just too hot to eat. Iceberg lettuce and celery are about the only thing I can eat when it's that hot.
So Laguna Farm is known for its mixed baby greens.
Oh, absolutely.
Our little salad mix. And funny story is I have a 14-year-old son. And for his birthday this year, he wanted salmon and crunchy lettuce specifically. And so that was another one of those times when I donned the sunglasses and went to the store and got a big head of romaine lettuce because, you know, the thousand bellies that we're feeding, we all put this little salad mix on our, you know, on our tacos or on our sandwiches.
And you guys have a reputation for one of the best salad mixes around. Everyone says that about your salad mix.
Thank
you. It's very popular. If you don't get to the Sebastopol Farmers Market on time, it's going to be gone.
It goes quickly.
And that's funny about the sunglasses and hat because I do something similar.
Sebastopol's a small town.
I'll wear a sweatshirt. Like if I'm sick or something, I haven't been able to cook, I'll put on a sweatshirt and put the hood up and keep my head down, and I'll buy prepared food. It's like you know, I'm not so sick anymore, but I do not have the energy to cook yet. So I'll sneak into like Fiesta Market and, you know, buy scallop potatoes and ribs or something.
We're all just regular people.
What if somebody says, I always tell people they have, please cook at home. It's so wonderful. And then they see me being a hypocrite.
Right. When you can, you know, I was at Papa Murphy's Take and Bake, mm-hmm. and I hear somebody behind me saying, Jennifer Branham, you're the last person I would expect to see here. And I turned around and I said, I have a 14-year-old son in a meeting tonight.
You do what you have to do. And on that note, we got to play another song.
Should know by the way you popped your car sideways at a wooden mast. It's the other kind of person that believes in making out once, love them and leave them fast. I guess I must be dumb, cause she had a pocket full of horses, children and some of them used. But it was Saturday night, I guess that makes it alright. You see, what have I got to lose? And money I
It's Mouthful. I'm Michelle Jordan. Thanks for sticking with us this evening. My guest, Jennifer Branham Burns, co-owner of Laguna Farms on a Cooper Road in Sebastopol, right there on the southwestern part of the Laguna de Santa Rosa. You can take a kayak out sometimes. I wanted to go kayaking in the Laguna. I've never done it, and I would just really love to sometime.
It's beautiful. There's a nice put-in spot on Occidental Road by the Laguna
Foundation. Yes, I've watched people put in there.
That's a good spot.
Yeah, and I've actually thought about talking to the Laguna Foundation and getting to go with them at some point.
Right.
Even just walking on some of the paths of the Laguna can be so magical. I took Joey, my older dachshund, I took him for a walk there before we had Lark. And we walked really far. We walked almost to Santa Rosa, and I swear a raven followed us. I could hear the raven's call. She didn't reveal herself until right at the very end I saw her. But she followed us, and I could hear her. I could hear her talking. And then I was just so excited when she finally revealed herself. But there's a lot of ravens that live in the Laguna, and I love ravens. So
it's a wonderful wildlife corridor. I'm so
really
excited
is.
That Santa Rosa and Sebastopol and Rohnert Park are all coming together, and Forestville coming together and protecting and celebrating the Laguna.
Yeah, it's just one of the most gorgeous places. And right now, it's so beautiful, partly because of the rain, but everything becoming alive in the spring, and the egrets and the great blue herons. And then if you do get a chance to go through the paths, God knows what else you're going to see at this time
otters.
Of year.
Otters.
I've never seen an otter. Do you see them
otters.
From the farm?
I don't.
Okay. Where do you see them?
Down on that high school road.
Oh, okay.
Area.
Oh, I'll have to go down there.
Yeah, the farm portion of the Laguna, it's really wonderful because it's got a very diverse tree canopy over it,
mm-hmm.
and it's a little bit narrower through there, so it doesn't have that invasive weed because it's much cooler,
mm-hmm.
and there's water in it year-round where
Laguna
Farm
nice.
Is, and I don't know, I think that's important for the wildlife to have that, and there's a mountain lion, I don't know if you know, seen last summer. just in that area there. Yes. So it's, you know, bobcats and mountain lions. One mountain lion and
all sorts. I hear quite a number where I am. I'm right on the edge of, I'm just up above Atascadero Creek.
Okay, so coyotes.
Coyotes. Sometimes a very noisy pack of coyotes, foxes, lots of opossums. And I didn't know this. I didn't know this about opossums. Did you know they eat ticks?
I did learn that recently.
There's been several articles about it.
Yes.
Opossums eat ticks. And it's like, well, there you go. Mm-hmm. We need more of them. There's a lot of deer where I am, a lot of skunk.
Raccoons, of course.
Oh, gosh. There was a family of raccoons living right outside my bedroom window. And they are bold. The teenagers would start coming down the tree right about the time I'm going to sleep. I can just open up the window and I could actually touch the tree if I wanted to reach my arm out. But I would just watch these five teenage raccoons. They just look at me like, yeah, what do you want?
They're pretty challenging on the farm. When we talk about organic agriculture, a lot of people think about, you know, what don't you spray for? How do you deal with pests? And we deal with pests with fencing sometimes because the raccoons will go into the cornfield and peel back the corn and take one or two bites and throw it on the ground. And if they'd eat their fill, you know, one ear at a time,
but
we could
don't.
Share, but they're very wasteful and... Uh-huh. You know, we have to put up electric fencing or regular fencing, chain link fencing around
and
our strawberry patch.
Deer, too, where
deer,
you are?
Deer, too.
Because I have a lot of deer where I am.
Yeah, and they, you know, a little bit in the spring, but they aren't as destructive as the raccoons are.
Yeah,
the raccoons are just kind of mean.
They are. They're
wasteful.
So cute, but man, they really will.
They pull plants out of the ground and stack them.
I mean, they've destroyed. I've quit doing much gardening. I figured out I have a lot of perennials I can grow once they're established and they're not good to eat. Mm-hmm. So between the gophers, which love my house, and the raccoons, that's all I do. I grow a little bit, some sorrel and some herbs, and the raccoons don't seem to go for that. But anything else, they just tear it up. And I just saw Larry Fields today. He was really well known in the 90s for growing the most extraordinary melons anyone had ever eaten. He grew, it was sunshine variety, yellow watermelon on the western slopes, low slopes of Sonoma Mountain in Pen Grove. And I really never, ever had a better melon than his sunshine melons. And two things happened. He got... a watermelon virus, in the plant.
Right.
But he would, you know, the raccoons knew when the melon was ripe, and he'd go out to he'd see them. He'd see his melons and know he was going to harvest for the farmer's market the next day. And he'd go out, and they'd go underneath the melon and eat a big hole in it. And so he looked like the melon was fine sitting there, and he'd start to harvest, and there'd be this big, huge chunk out of it.
Is that where the crane melon was developed in those foothills?
Yes.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, I think the crane melon was a little bit further north than his patch of land. But that patch of land just grew the most amazing melons. But slowly he had to switch over to musk melons, you know, cantaloupes and the relatives, and I think winter squash.
Okay.
And so for the last year, he's not farming right now, but for his last couple of years of farming, he would call me like once a season and he'd say, if you can meet me at the corner of Washington Street and blah, blah, open your trunk, I will be there with melons. So it's like doing some secretive deal. And he puts like 7 or 8, you know, yellow watermelons in the trunk of my car. And I wouldn't eat anything except that for a week. And they're so good. I really miss them. So next thing we've got, we've got 7 or 8 minutes left. What sort of challenges? I really want people to understand what the challenges are that y'all have to go through, especially dealing with a year-round harvest. We've talked about some of the spring challenges.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of money going in, not much money coming, you know, or lots of money being spent on the farm, but not as much to sell. So as the year progresses, what are some of the challenges that you've had to face over the years?
Goodness, it's interesting because there's, you know, new challenges every year, and you know, a lot of times if it's maybe very overcast and the plants are very tender, and then we have an immediate heat coming on, mm-hmm. you know, the strawberries will get sunburned, or the melons and or the winter squash will get sunburned. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we've been last year in our melon field, speaking of melons, we grew sunflowers so that they could help shade the melon
Great
plants
idea.
Because
uh-huh.
melons don't have a lot of leaves. They're kind of spindly little vines.
Yeah.
And without the leaves to shade them, mm-hmm. often they'll get sunburned. So we so in growing the sunflower is also known for bringing nutrients up from mm-hmm. deep into the soil. And it also is food for the birds that maybe they won't eat other things mm-hmm. if they have the sunflower seeds to enjoy. So, you know, a strong heat burst is something that would be challenging. Any fluctuations in the weather is something to address. We've been working through some challenges with our basil. Our late basil has been getting a mold, a fungus on it,
mm-hmm.
and it has to do with the condensation in the hoop houses that breeds this this fungus. Mm-hmm. And so we're doing basil really early this year, and we're going to plant it outdoors instead of under plastic.
Uh-huh.
Though basil actually likes it really, really, really hot.
Right. Yeah. There's a friend. In fact, it was Frederic Lavoie-Pierre.
Okay.
You must know Frederic.
Yes.
She said, don't plant basil until it's warm enough to lay outside on the ground naked.
Yes.
I put that in an interview, and her son was just in his mid-teens, and was like, oh, Mom, why did you have to say that? But I think she makes a good point in that when it's that warm, that's when I want to eat basil.
Yes.
I really want to eat basil when there's local tomatoes. And local zucchini, which actually is probably not that far off.
It's not too far off. We have our plants in the ground.
So what do you think? Maybe another 4 weeks or something?
A few more weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah, depending on the weather. They're starting to flower.
Yeah, that's when it seems to me the summer harvest just, you wait, and suddenly there's zucchini, then it all just starts tumbling.
Yes, yes. So, so farming always has its challenges, mm-hmm. but they're not, you know, They're more challenges, I think, is a good way to put mm-hmm. it. They're puzzles. They're things. Oh,
little things to solve.
How are we going to figure this out?
Yeah.
How are we going to keep the deer out of the strawberry patch? Oh, let's put up a fence. You know, how are we going to work through different harvesting cultivation challenges?
Mm-hmm.
Equipment and frost and breaking pipes. There's always something to do.
Always
on the farm.
Yes, yes. And then one thing we haven't talked about is what I know that you read the newsletter.
Yes.
So what is your role at the farm?
I mostly manage the sales and distribution.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Nacho grows it. I sell it.
Okay.
This is a general division.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a lot of overlap in between where mm-hmm. I'll say, you know what? People are really into kale right now. And back in the early days of people getting into kale,
yes.
I missed the memo. And we could not keep kale in stock. And I couldn't figure out why. And that's when Whole Foods put out their Andy scale. Their nutrition density, you know, what's the most nutrient-dense vegetable, and they put kale at the top. And they put collards second, but for some reason, nobody was really asking for collards, but they were really into kale. And kale was a hard sell six years ago.
It was. And now it's like, oh, don't talk to me about kale.
We grow 5 different varieties of kale.
You grow Lacinato?
Yes.
Russian?
Red Russian. Siberian? Russian. It's the same one. And then we have two little baby kales. One is more of an ornamental mm-hmm. kale that we put in our salad mix.
Oh, yes. I know that. Yeah.
Really pretty.
Yes.
So I'll tell him, you know, hey, people are really into kale right now. Mm-hmm. Or, hey, Mike Pollan wrote a new book. and make some suggestions on mm-hmm. some things that we should grow. And then he'll give me some suggestions on, mm-hmm. you know, maybe we shouldn't wholesale this right now because we don't really have a lot, or mm-hmm. maybe, you know, we uh-huh. should raise the price on that, or so there's a little bit of overlap, but for the most part, uh-huh. he grows it and supervises the field crew and his team.
That was my next question, the field crew and the packing crew for the CSA boxes. How many people?
13 altogether.
13, yeah. Okay. That's
6 full-time in the field,
uh-huh.
and then part-time in the barn, farmers markets, delivery, uh-huh. Administrative. store sales. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So 25 acres, 13 people. That sounds about right, because that's that's a lot of land, 25 acres. It's a lot of land to farm.
A lot of it does go fallow, though, which is wonderful.
You rotate throughout the year.
We do rotate throughout the year. In fact, he opened up a field last year that hadn't been farmed for 5 years, and it was so intensively farmed for a number of years. It was just in a prime spot, and so he let it go fallow for a few years, and then he cover cropped it, and then he turned it over. And you know, his intention is to grow it out for a few years.
Now, for people who are interested in the CSA, do you have room?
Absolutely.
Okay. What's the best way?
The best way for people to sign up for our CSA is to go to our website, lagunafarm.com.
That's farm or farms?
Singular.
LagunaFarm.com, and they can do all the paperwork there online.
Yeah, there's a lot of different options. They could choose whether they want it delivered to their home or if they'd like to come out to our farm in Sebastopol. They can pick between a juicing box or a produce box, or which day of the week they'd like to come.
And you've got all the add-ons.
So you can have fun shopping. And if you're a smaller family, maybe every other week is best. Mm-hmm. The number one reason why people quit the CSA is they find it's a lot of food.
Yes, it is a lot of food. It's more than you realize.
Yes.
It's really abundant. And on that note, it's time to say goodbye. Time flies on Mouthful. And I just have to say thank you so much for growing great cilantro. You're often the only local cilantro around, and I count on you. So, Jennifer, thanks very much.
Thank you so much for having me. Just one little thing, if you are interested in signing up and you put in coupon code NEWCSA, you'll get $5 off your first box.
There you go, NEWCSA. Meet me back here next week when I'll be talking with Rex Williams of Williams Ranchers Lamb. So